thanks for letting me interview today, mate. How are you?
Pleasure to be
First
here,
First of all, how are you and how is your health?
Yeah, absolutely. It was a big scare, mate. Azerbaijan doctor saved my life. I went out for a run. I run every morning. I'm down to be playing weight as the wife.
Oh, you look well.
13 and a half, mate. It was a little bit of runny. I went out for a run. I run every morning from hotel to hotel in Baku. And just got a little pain here. I thought, oh, that's not right. I thought, oh, just maybe I've been doing too many press-ups, you know.
You need to calm down, do you?
Give it a week, and then I tried again on the treadmill. I said, oh, I'll give it another go, see what's happening. Try and run through it. I went out for a jog, same again. But as the club doctor was there, I went and saw this guy. He said, oh, well, let's go through the procedure. Then I got on the stress, I took my top off and go, hey, look magnificent, Mr. Adams. You can play today. I went, oh, yeah. About 30 seconds on the treadmill, we went, go to the hospital now. So, and he said the great words, keep calm. So, and all their faces changed. And I went, oh, my God. They did an angiogram, that's the operation. They put the camera in and had a look, and there was two blockages. 199%, 170%. So doctors, they put two stents in straight away. Saved my life, yeah.
He said, it would have been that close?
Any longer, I'd be dead. All over. So I got a lucky boy. It scared me. That's the show over.
I'm glad you're here. We'll pick up from you.
The doctor actually came round the next day and he said, I don't usually get this kind of conversation. He said, usually it's dead, you know, so I don't have this conversation.
Really? What's in the pipeline? Any takeovers? I see you a while back talking about Aston Villa, and we read in the paper that, you know, there's been a couple of things.
My boss had a look at it and it didn't come off, to be honest with you. You know, I work for Tully Alderolf, who's been 5.5 years. I've been working with him now, and he's a magnificent boss. And, you know, Alex Ferguson always said, don't pick your club, pick your owner. And I've got really lucky. I've got, with a guy, I've got utmost respect for him. He's a good man. And he had a look at it and he said, look, let's try and do our club first. He said, let's try and be champions of the Azerbaijan League and win Europa League this year, which has been amazing. We knocked out Panathinaikos, which, you know, I've put a team together, lucky enough, with the help of the coach and a Ukrainian coach I put in place. Good man, nice guy, open, someone that I can work with. We've got $5 million USD. We put a team together that's got in the group stage of the Europa League. More or less done it now, Paul, with him. You know, he asked me to do a few things, build an academy. We've got the best academy in the country.
It's unbelievable. I'm sitting here listening to you. You've had heart attack. You know, you're saying you're lucky.
I didn't get to heart attack.
Lucky enough to be here. Still love football. Didn't you want your natural reaction to go, I need to pull out of here now. It's the most stressful game in the world. And you don't, I mean, your love of the game you could see it just talking to you.
My cardiologist said, don't take a football management job in the next 6 months. He don't think, the way that I process, he said, I've got to be more Alex Ferguson than Arsene Wenger. He said, you've got to get it out. And sometimes.
He didn't say Paul Merson, though. Didn't see my managerial career at Wolfsburg, did he?
But I think, you know, sometimes I went into that, and I do keep it all in, and you know me as a player, it wasn't inside, was it? You know, I got it out, and sometimes I maybe needed to do that. But it's all a learning process, you know. I had a great experience with Harry for 3 years, and you know, it was incredibly entertaining and fun, and he taught me a great, enormous amount in motivation and getting it out. But there's also another part of me that's very analytical and does keep it in. So I've got to be wary of that stress. But no, football's been my life, boy, and like yours, you know, and you're around it today, and I will be till my grave, you know. It's as simple as that. The right opportunity, the right people. I don't work with idiots anymore, you know. When I was down at Portsmouth, it was complete. I don't have to do that anymore. Yeah. You know, I've got a lovely family and a balanced life, and everything's great, mate, and clear as a bell up here, 19 years without a drink. And my life's wonderful today, and I want to grab hold of that. You know, it was a time I wanted to get out of it and wanted to get smashed, and today I want to get in it and be with it. And if football management comes along with people that I respect and I can do with, then I think I've got something to offer. But I'm not in any rush, or I'm not in it, you know, I don't want to jump into the next job that come along. And weirdly, you know, when I had this, about three jobs come. It's like buses, isn't it? Oh. Yeah, about three jobs come along, and I've kind of went, it's not right for me just
at the moment. Well, that's fair play to you, because you're going to be
but nothing in this country, for sure. No. I don't seem to be a target for the guys, but...
Do you find that frustrating? We seem to be bringing in managers from other countries that have got no experience at all. You've played at the top level. Don't that hurt you sometimes, your pride, of thinking, why not me? Why not me at Aston Villa?
I'm only human. It's the honest answer. You know, me, Paul, and I speak my mind. And I'm not sure they wanted me. You know, you can play this game sometimes, and it's not reality. Where you get frustrated. It was never on offer. Do you know what I mean? Do I get frustrated that Remy's got it? No, not at all. You know, I wish him all the luck in the world, you know, and good luck to him. I played with him at Arsenal. But I've got the massive respect for my boss. So I don't want to jump out of this job just for the sake of being 6 months somewhere else. The statistics are not good either.
They're not good. I mean, they're not. If you do 18 months, you know what I mean, you're pulling up
the
trees.
Statistics are not.
But when you left Arsenal, would you have took the Wickham job again if you were just coming? It's easy afterwards.
In hindsight.
But, you know, you're working with players. You're playing with the best players in the world at the time, in Thierry Henry and your Bergkamps and your Perez's. Then you go to Wickham, no disrespect to Wickham players.
No, they were.
That must be frustrating.
It was frustrating working. Technically, they weren't good. Dicko came over once and I was doing a session with the right back. He's a Dutch lad, is it? Ullenbeek. And he kept on controlling it and then having another touch and then putting his third touch in the channel. You know, I was getting Nathan Tyson to run the channels and stuff. And he kept controlling it. So I knew young coach would go in there and I show him how to do it. Put it, took your first touch in there so your second one can go in. And if you're really good, you can do it in one, mate. You know, and he's like, controlled it again and then had another three touches. And then he's doing it again. And I went over, Dicko was on the side. I went, Dicko. And he said to me, did you just tell your right back how to control it and kick the ball? I said, yeah. So it can be frustrating. Nothing against him. He was what he was. In disrespect, Martin O'Neill was very vocal and very encouraging me to take that job. And in hindsight, I probably wouldn't have done it.
For me, I would have bet anything you would have been manager of Arsenal one day. Who's to say it won't happen?
I'm still alive, mate, and I'm still kicking.
Yeah,
and if the fans want me, then of course I'll.
Yeah,
I'd
but
go
do you know what I mean?
Bash,
but, like you went.
But it's too big for one. You know, Arsenal is probably going to be the last manager as we kind of class a manager. You know, the job's too big now. I think actually coaching the manager's job's flawed, actually. The statistics point in that direction. Win the championship, I think it's 8 months now for an average tenure of a coach. And you kind of think you need a team around you. You know, you see the scouting system at Arsenal now, and it's not just one bit. You've got about five or six now. They're just doing one area and stuff, you know. And
I have a thing about that. I think this is why kids are not getting a chance, because managers are only getting 8 months. I mean, but, you know, with Arsene Wenger, will he have the job as long as he wants the job?
Yeah.
As long as he wants it.
Well, I think so. I think he's that powerful at the club, and he's done financially a fantastic job for the club. So, a good guy, a nice guy, but I think we've all got our flaws and we've all got our weaknesses. And I did an article some years ago and voiced it pretty much all years ago about his coaching ability, and no disrespect, I put it over. And when I say coach, it's his teaching ability, really. And I see the fullbacks, for instance. I don't think we're talking about fullback. I don't think they've improved. No one has gone there like Gal Clichy and Kieran Gibson and now Bellerin. I bet you in the next 6 years, Bellerin will be still playing the same. There'd be no improvement in those areas and central defenders. You know, I've seen them over the last 10 years and every year, an underestimated the game. If you've got the best back four like Chelsea last season and Vincent Kompany when Man City won the title and then go back to Man United with Rio, every year, the best teams with the best back four, solid, win the league, you know, year in, year out. And Arsenal have not had that for the last, and he's missed the balance. But that's the only thing I can throw at Arsenal, really, is that I just don't think that he's a physiologist, you know him.
Yeah.
Best in preparation and recovery, best I've been, you know, under his...
And me, yeah.
Yeah, what a condition, I just go out and play. And he never taught me a thing how to defend. He always used to say, oh, I'm not going to be able to teach you. You know, what do I tell Tony Adams? I don't tell him how to hit the ball, and I don't tell Thierry Henry how to finish or to run, you know. So whether that's a cop-out, I'm not sure. But I noticed as soon as Sol Campbell left and Ashley Cole went, the last people that had actually been taught how to defend, there's been a change, significant change in the club.
We'll go back to your early days at Arsenal. I mean, a lot of clubs after you when you was a kid. A lot of clubs, you must have been well thought of. Why Arsenal?
My dad, really. My dad, working class upbringing, said, if you're going to be the best Ashfelter, he was a roofer. He said, join the best Ashfelter team. And at that time, Terry Burton was down there. They had the best teachers, the best coaches. And he said, if you're going to learn how to be a footballer, then go to the best club that can do that. And I went to West Ham when I was about 13, and Fulham and Orient and all these clubs, Tottenham. And the level of coaching wasn't that great. There was 50 kids running around in the gym, and that was my experience. And I went to Arsenal, and actually I walked in, and Steve Rowley, the scout that said, go and have some training, he was really new. I think it was his first week, and I think it was Terry's first week as well. And I walked into the Marble Hall, and I walked in and I saw a guy called Tommy Coleman, who's passed away now. Tommy was down there, and he said, who are you? I said, oh, Tony, Steve Rowley's asked me to come down here. I don't know, no Steve Rowley. And me and my dad, we were kind of proud people as well. We said, oh, come on, we're going. We're walking out, and he went, and Tommy shouted after us type of thing, oh, as you're here, why don't you come and have a bash? So it was close to me walking out the door.
Another three or four
1979,
steps.
Mate. It could have been all out, three or four, walking down, walking out, and he went, oh, where's your ear?
83, you made your debut.
Yeah.
How did you feel that day?
I was scared, as any nervous as anyone might be. I put my shorts on the wrong way round. Kenny Sampson said to me, you know, you all right? I went, yeah. You all right, Tone? Yeah, I'm all right, Tone. Yeah, you all right? Right, if you get the ball, I go, yeah, we ain't getting... Yeah, don't give it to me, he went. I went, OK. He said, panic. I said, just panic. It kind of settled me down a little bit. And I went, OK. And I get out there, and I did actually panic. Colin Hill threw me the ball, I fell over. And Colin West put it past Pat Jennings in the top corner.
Yeah,
so we're 1-0 down after 10 minutes. And I just run around and I kicked a few people and they seemed to like it. The crowd cleared of it. And then I made a few more tackles and I steamed in a bit more and they kind of liked it even more. So I kind of went, well, this is easy. I can do this. You know, I can do this.
Who was the players that looked after you in them days, being a young centre-half, just
getting
into
the pub?
And that.
The back four, really. Viv, Kenny and Dave O'Leary, I think, were the biggest influences on me. Kenny in particular, I think he was, you know, I looked up to Kenny on and off the pitch, probably. But I learned a lot before that. I watched other defenders, and you know, Alvin Martin was very good technically. Billy Bonds was, you know, strong, picked the ball up when their team was losing 1-0, he picked the ball up and run through the team, and Dave O'Leary never made a tackle. The way that he pushed people to one side and the other side, jockeyed people, as we called it back in the day. And Big Willie Young, do you remember Big Willie?
I remember
sitting there, and I've always got to tell you this story, it's fantastic. There was a woman, I said, my first game, they got invited to watch Arsenal, and I stood in the lower, East Lower, I think it was, and this woman, when we got a corner, this woman, she stood up, she was about 80, she was, and she went, Willie, Willie, Willie. And this guy, you know, Scottish, 6'6", ginger hair, he ran up and he just held himself at the corner, you know, at the ball, and went, rah, Willie's got up. And no disrespect, Willie, he weren't that good. But the influence he had on the team, and I think, oh, I'm going to have that one, I'm going to have Billy Bonds, I'm going to have Alvin Martin, I'm going to have Dave O'Leary, I'm going to wrap them all up into Tony Adams and put me out there.
Was you always a leader? Because you went on to become probably one of the best leaders in football.
Thank you.
How did that feel? One, was you always a leader? And two, you come into a team with big personalities. You know, you had your Charlie Nicholases, your Viv Andersons, your Kenny Sampsons, your Graham Rixes. People, like, if you messed up, they wouldn't be scared of knocking you down.
Off the pitch, I was scared to death. You know me, Paul. I didn't arrest all those things to after my, 29, I got clean and sober and started to have a look at myself. But in those days, on the pitch, I was very confident. But I think you have to have the talent to back it up. I think they saw that I had some talent, so they kind of let me. If I'd just been a kid off the street, and we had a few, back in the day that came in and would go in and bowl into the changing rooms and go, all right, mate, hey, it's all right, son, Dave O'Leary, all get your ears cut, Pat, these kind of things. If you didn't have the talent, I think there would have been 2 minutes you'd been out the door, and explosions of young kids really helped Arsenal, and George Graham in particular, and he got rid of all the so-called big-time Charlies. And he had a lot of kids, enthusiastic kids and leaders, and we just brushed them at once, and we didn't really care, did we? Mickey Thomas and stuff, we just kind of went...
Well, that was what I was going to say, and then George come in, and for me, started the whole revolution, really, because Arsenal weren't going anywhere, really, early 80s. He taught us the game, it weren't just turn up for a training, five-a-side, go home, we were taught, and that's why all them people on the telly...
He taught us a style of play. I think it was very pragmatic.
I thought he was very knowledgeable.
Unbelievably, and he done all his qualifications. He took a lot from Terry, but I'm with you, Paul. But I'm just saying, there's another aspect of football as well. The openness of Arsene. There is a balance. I think there's a balance in football, and what we got with George was regimented, was day in day out this style of play. It was conformed. This unit, he's the Tony Pulis and Sam Allardyce of today for me. These guys are organisation. You put your structure there, and we had to comply to that. There wasn't a lot of freedom. Flair players like you got to stick to the side. Be a number 10 in this day. You'd go and play number 10, go and play with freedom, Merce, go and do your stuff, like you did with Portsmouth. This is the way that George was. George, and there's nothing wrong with it. The 91 team should have done more. That squad was one of the best squads that I've ever played in. And we only won the league. Gazza's done us with the free kick and stuff and links for the semi-final. But, we didn't do nothing in 92. Maybe we was playing too hard off the pitch at the time. But we went on and done the Cup Winners' Cup in 94. But that squad was the 98 squad of the 2002 that I played in. But
could he have managed us 15 years on 60 and 70 grands a week? You've got to remember, we were petrified.
Yeah.
We were petrified. Yeah, I mean, he was an iron rod. Do you think if we were all on 50, 60, 70 grand at that time, I was getting more money for winning a game than what I was getting a week, And that's why I'd always go and cuddle someone when they scored a goal and give them a kiss and everything.
Personally speaking, I think I saw the success we were having. And I think if we weren't having the success, then maybe we might have questioned it. And he was very good at it. George, the way that, the England scenario, I didn't play for England. I played and then I was out for 18 months, then I played and I was out for another 18 months. And he kept on saying, you don't want to go to England, you don't want to go to England. Come and play for me. come with me. But, I became a better player for Arsenal.
89, it's still one of the most famous football matches. If you're old enough, don't matter where you live, people will tell you where they were that day. They will. Did you think we could win that night? Honestly.
I just remember you in the coach before and sorting the odds out, that's for sure.
I couldn't see it.
No, but you said something about, I always remember in the coach, you said something about for 2-0, it was like 8-1, but to win the league, it was like 16.
It was something silly, yeah.
And you went, hold on a minute, this is a no-brainer. You don't want to bat 2-0, you want to go for the...
But when we were going to overscore 3 and 4 goals at Anfield, that was the thing. I mean,
Liverpool were the team, weren't they, in those days? Who would have known that they'd gone on and not won anything, since 1990? But they were winning everything, weren't they? There's super football team in those days, and to go up there. I think I don't know about you, but it seemed like everyone, we were pretty confident, outside of the bus. Okay, I can see what you're saying, but I think we had the plan again, going back to the George Graham, his team talk, he got it spot on.
Prime time with George, he went to a free at the back that day. I mean, that's why...
He only used it three times that year.
Three times, we only lost once we lost once in 91, but to go free at the back that day. If Arsene Wenger had George Graham's tactical knowledge, would Arsenal be a better football team?
I think his defensive knowledge. I think if he had his defensive knowledge, if he balanced his team, then 100%, Paul. I think he hasn't got the balance right in the last 10 years.
We'd score a goal, and I'd always remember going back to the halfway line, and you could see the other team's faces. The game was finished.
Yeah.
It was finished. They knew they couldn't get two, and if they got one, they were going to be lucky.
There's a lot of principles that are not applied today, and a lot of, you know, I spoke to Steve about it, the Baldy, and, you know, you don't think that you can do it anymore, but I do think you can. It's like simple. 85% of goals is scored in the box. The prime thing about George Graham is keeping teams out of the box. So you've got to engage higher up. Your fullbacks have got to go out. At the moment, they're keeping them so narrow, teams, that the wingers are actually defending.
Yeah.
So you've got your wingers back defending. Well, I don't know if they can defend. And the fullbacks are right in alongside, you know, pushing them out, getting them inside, you know, the right wing and the left wing type of thing back in the day. You used to show them inside, so everything comes inside. Yeah. And you narrow the pitch. You know, Terry Venables used to mark it off. He used to mark them and say, you can't go in those areas, you know, and I still do training. So it's a simple philosophy. I don't see Arsene never coaching. He's never coached that. He never put sessions on like that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's not going to happen. He's going to produce flowing ball possession, combination passes, interactive movement. It's all about his fullbacks play like wingers, Paul. You know, would that have happened in my day?
No, it wouldn't have happened.
At least one can go and the other one stays right by the side of me because he's going to make me look good and I'm going to have someone to protect me in front. And, you know, they go missing.
I remember the Man United game. Man United away. We score at one end, score at the other end. Stay at my house that night. And the headlines of the paper.
Public apology, but I think I have already.
But the paper the next day, Donkey Adams. I mean, you'd scored an own goal. You hadn't done anything, you know, by scoring an own goal. Did you think...
He's driving a cab now, the editor of the Mirror.
Did you sort of pull away from the press then?
I suppressed all my feelings in those days, whether it be in football or booze, you know, so everything was kept down.
Well, your dad, you talked about your dad, God bless him. Alex was a lovely bloke. It took you everywhere to play football. If it wasn't for your dad, you wouldn't have been a footballer, in my opinion. No. You know what I mean? Because I think it's so important for your dads to take you everywhere like my dad did. How did he feel? It must have hurt, because I knew, you know.
We weren't a family of sharing things, and it was half the problems, and I'm sure they were hurting in the same way that I was hurting, that we would keep it inside, you know, and I caused my family a hell of a lot of grief in my alcoholism, and not only in the front page of I was getting in quite regular, and I still, even now, 19 years with that, sometimes when the papers come through on a Sunday, I still get the twitches, you know. You think, what have I been up to the weekend? You know? Oh, the girl been walking the dog and going to the theatre, Jesus.
Devil, you.
Back page news.
A prime example again with George, because I didn't think we were a great team. We were very organised.
I don't put a stamp, Paul. I think of the day, I think we had some enormous... But that's the argument that Arsene has with George. You know, I saw a funeral, Bill Graves' funeral, you know, and they were having an argument about exactly this point. George was saying, you need to get more defensive, Arsene. You need to organise your team. And Arsene was saying, George, you need to be open. You need to flow. You need to let your team go. If that 91 team or the 89 team, if you let them go, they would have done even more. That's what Arsene was saying. That's them too. I think there's a balance. I think there's a balance to be had of the pair of them, to be honest with you. So you never know, one day
Palmer,
you might get the opportunity.
Palmer, a prime example of George, to set a team up to frustrate a very, very good team in Palmer and go and win the game.
OK, so the sum of the parts...
You know, you watch Arsenal the other week against Bayern Munich, no different to that day.
No.
To Palmer. I know people might go, well, Palmer ain't Bayern Munich. They were a good team. They had some top draw players. We went and done a job and got a result.
I don't think we can win leagues playing that way with those players. Mm. But I think you can get results and I think you can win cups. And I think that's what we did. I think if we tried to open up with that team, we would have got... We got a bit smanked. You know?
So that's good management as well at the same time.
I think it's unbelievable management. Yeah. I think it's realising what you've got as tools and put it into the best unit possible to go and win and get the result. And that's what we did in those days, you know. We had a fantastic organisation and system. And the sum of the parts are bigger than the individuals in those days, you know. For me, my best back four, the famous back four of Dixon, Bold, Adams, the one that won this one, and Winterburn left back. For me, it's probably the worst technically back four that I played in. Now, when I started, I had Viv Anderson, two World Cup, European trophies, Kenny Sampson, 86 games for England, Dave O'Leary, Pat Jennings in goal. Unbelievable unit, you know. And then I finished with Lauren, Dave Seaman, Sol Campbell and Ashley Cole, probably the best back, left back in the world. So actually, but the sum of the parts of Dixon, Boulder, because the way they worked as a unit was better than both of those back fours that I played in. So St George got a team to win the European Cup Winners' Cup with a very, very good outfit and an organisation.
That was interesting, that was, to say, you know, as you say, you name all them players, but
they're not saying always... that they wasn't bad players. No. I think they were very good players and underestimated players, but there's some of the units, you know, the way that we played, the style that we played. I knew Nigel didn't have to say a word. He was showing insight into me. I knew where Baldy was. I knew where Lee Dixon was in. Yeah. You know, I knew. And if it was the other side, we would swim. We didn't physically have the rope. We had the mental rope. People run offside all the time, you know. If we weren't going to go with them. Go on, if you're going to run offside, then we're not going to go with you. I'm going to save my legs, you know. George always said, up late at 35.
Would that work now with the rule of the offside trap now? Because how many times did you get an offside decision by just putting your hand up and looking at the ref?
Well, I think you can still do that. I think they're human beings, and I think you can influence.
It is a lot.
I think if the right back says to the, come on, lads, put me on your toes, I think it can go. Yeah. You know, I think we're only human. But there's a few exceptions. I worked with Portsmouth in 2008, so we're not talking too far against. And there's basic defending principles. When, you know, when you put on a crossing session, you can come out to the box. You know, you leave people in. If it's going to go back and it's going to go to that player, it's going to be offside. You know what I mean? Yeah. But if a player on the other side, then there's a reluctancy to come out from the fullbacks, then you've got to stay back. So that's no problem that the unit stays back with it. Mm. Most teams today, they show the line. Mm. They show the line, which means you have to go deep. Yeah. You have to, the game stretches. So you get more goals, in the 18-yard box.
No good for you.
No. Heart attack football, I call it.
After that, George left. You know, me and you...
That's what we got in Gabala.
Me and you and nicknames... Arsenal was son of George, me and you.
You as well, was you?
He loved me, George. Yeah. Give me enough chances, didn't he? He left. What did you think then when George left and Bruce Rioch coming?
You know, personally, Paul, it was the darkest time of my illness. From 94, got really bad, to 96 when it finally came to a close. And Stuart Houston and Bruce Rioch came into that period and I let them both down, you know, through my alcoholism, and he was like the teacher going, but personally, to be honest with you, I was going towards the bottom anyway, you know. I was drinking more and more, and a couple of occasions I did in those days drink, you know, actually play drunk, you know, the Sheffield United game and the Everton game and Swindon, three games that come to mind, where George took me off. I made out I was ill. I was like, oh. And he said, oh, good, thanks for having a go, Tone, son off. but it was bleak, and I have said sorry to Bruce, and because I really did let him down in them. I was spending more time in the pub and in the clubs than I was on the training pitch. So it's just unfortunate timing at times, isn't it?
Yeah, of course, timing, it is, you know, timing.
7 weeks, Arsenal. I was clean and sober 7 weeks when Arsenal walked through the door.
I was there that day when he first come in. I thought, we're joking here or what? He looked like Inspector Clouseau. You know, he talked like him. His ideas were different. But it opened everybody's mind up. I mean, with George, I love George, you know, I'd never have a bad word to say about him. But in November, when we were training on a Tuesday, I could tell you what I was doing in March on a Tuesday.
Yeah.
You know, and people were strolling to training 2 minutes before training, just to get ready, you know, before 10 o'clock. Arsene come in, everybody was in at 9 a.m. He was tall, centre-half, David Seaman gets the ball, get up. All of a sudden, Arsene comes in. He's saying, right, Tone, you need to drop off now. I need you to get the ball and start playing. And, you know, you hadn't done that for, like, 15 years.
He never said that. We started playing and he didn't say stop.
Right.
OK? There's a big difference in that. And he says it himself, you know. We just played. We were, you know, sometimes you do a disservice to people like Dicko, Nigel. It's the only issue that I've got, really, Baldy. These players were great players. They were great pros. And I was 7 weeks sober as well. I was ready for change. When the pupil's ready, the teacher appears. And I think we were all ready for new and different, and we'd all got a bit of life under our belt, and we could see Arsene's methods was, you know, the Thursday, the little 25, you know, the stretch. We was like, come on, we've got to do some more. And we used 27 minutes. You know, that's enough. It's a, come on, we've got to do some more. And actually, we felt the benefits. You know, the other lads could see the benefits of their extended career.
Oh,
and don't, let's be honest, you know, finance, Paul. You know, it went through the roof, and that's not Arsene, that was the club. You know, Danny Fittiman come and invested 40 million into the club. All of a sudden, my 300 contract went to a million. You know, no wonder I was bloody pleased. I was going to Man United, and he said, oh, I'll treble your contract. You're like, well, I might stay here. Yeah. And Boldy got a new contract, Dave Seaman got a new contract. So there is an element of that. They got pretty much what they deserved, and that was the downside of George.
Yeah.
You know, the downside of George was to suppress us maybe financially and to give us what we deserved. And, you know, it's never been about money. You talk to Nigel and we'd just done it because we loved it, didn't we?
No, of course.
But to actually get compensated better and you know, and not have to worry about, you know, what Chelsea and Dennis Wise was on at Chelsea three times what you're on, or, you know, we had Dennis Bergkamp turned up, you know, and David Platt, and you had these people and a lot of money. But we got the same as them.
Yeah.
You know, we were, oh, OK. Because, you know, before they would have been like three times as much as us, you know. And we've all been winning the leagues, and George would have said, oh, you've won the league, though. You know, he might be four times as much money as you, but there's another fiver.
Yeah. It was a successful football team, playing brilliant football. And then you get one of the most iconic goals we've seen for, you know, still remember it, you know, Everton, Boldy gets it, you run, I don't know where you're going. I do not know where you're going. And it goes over the top. And what did you think when that went in? Because you just...
It's one of your runs. You knew where I was going.
Yeah, I knew where you was going, but when you hit it left-footed and then you just went...
Suck it in, mate. Yeah. Suck it in.
I always think things happen for a reason. And it was just, when I watched it, it sort of brought a tear to my eye. It was like all that thing, and then you just went like that. It was, you know, what did you think?
Well, if you said 19 months before, I wouldn't have done it. We were in a different regime. I was drunk and we didn't have that freedom. And Arsene was perfect for me in those periods. I had a lot of talking with Arsene off the pitch about life, and, you know, he's a very knowledgeable guy, as you know. You know, he's wonderful company, interesting man, and I was opening up as well as a person, as a human being, and not spending all my time in pubs and clubs and in the gutter. For me, the actual science of it is, Kenny Sampson used to do it in training all the time. He used to give it to me and say, stick me in. He's get me in, stick me in, because he was always off. Kenny was like a wing-back, weren't he? You know, he's
well above his time.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the great, great footballer. And he used to say to me all the time, stick me in, and he would go. So I had that always, and I always had that in the back of my head somewhere, you know, always kind of to use sometime, somewhere.
Yeah.
So I don't know when. But I'd just done it in the Boldy, and I stuck it at Boldy, and I said, stick me in. And legged it and smashed it home. And there was a peace, there was a moment of clarity and spiritual moments, a bit airy-fairy, mate. And it, more of the point is, after that, and we went and won it, I didn't need a drink. I didn't need to suppress all these good feelings. I went for a walk with a dog and met up with the guys in the evening, went out for a bite to eat, and it was really simple and really fulfilling and enjoying. So, you know, I used to poke fun at that back in the day.
Okay, I know you did. Yeah. When you left Arsenal, did you think it was the right time to leave? Did they ever offer you a coaching role, knowing that you was going to go and be the manager of Wickham? Did they say, no, you stay here, we want you to coach here?
Well, the fans wanted me to do another year. I'd done 13 games that year. Physically, it was becoming difficult to get on the pitch. I've never been a sub. I just can't do it. One pre-season.
Coming on, changing a game, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, for the worse. I did it in Austria, one pre-season. You know, when he has two teams
in
the first team, it's no reflection of the A and the B team. So I came on second. You know, I needed about three. In those days, I needed about 3 hours to get going.
Rigor mortis, that.
So I knew I wasn't going to be a sub, and I didn't want to go to the lower leagues, and I didn't want to do that. I'd done all my career there, and I think, you know, how many games, and I'd been an 100%er, and I expected, you know, every good time I went onto the football pitch, I wanted to do my best, because the fan that's sitting there and he's paying his money to watch you, and if it's my last game and I have a nightmare, he's always going to remember me there. And I don't want to get in a cab in 20 years' time and him say, God, I was there your last game, you were a nightmare. You know, you weren't that great. You know, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and
I just felt it was right. We'd done the double. I'd pretty much done everything that I wanted to do with Arsenal. I just felt it was right to maybe spend some time with the family and do all the other things. There's a big world out there, isn't there? That I'd not been doing for the... You know, and it come to the point, you know what football's like, Paul. You know, you, aeroplanes and hotels, and it's not the plane on the Saturday, it's the training, you know. And me and Dicko used to, in that last year, we used to get on, and the pitches are like this now. And we used to every morning get in there, and that knee would go, and I'm like, John Artson. I'd go on, you know, how many times can you do it? And Arson was a coach that expected you to train, and he wasn't one that, you know, wrap you up in cotton wool and stick you out at the weekend type of thing, because of his physiology. So I knew I wasn't going to get away with that. I'd done it a couple of times with him, and he always was very annoyed, but he kind of let me get on with it to a certain extent. But I thought, no, maybe I need to... Maybe I need to move on now. And I'm glad I did it, you know. I'm still, apart from this art, relatively healthy. And I went out and I did... I got no regrets, Paul, you know, and Wickham's there for a purpose.
But Arsenal never asked you to stay?
No, he didn't. We just had a nice 1v1. I think he knew, and so did I, that it was time to shake hands and move on. He never said, you know, stay around the place. But Arsene wouldn't, I don't think he knows. You know, he didn't do a lot of talking anyway. You know, if I turned up the next day and said, I'm now the coach here, I think he would have just, OK. I think that's the way it was with Thierry Henry. Went down there recently when he came back from New York or whatever. Yeah. He started training there. I said, how did you get... He said, oh, I just turned up. He said, you know what it's like with Arsene. You just turn up and start training. He didn't say no, so away you go. It's a bit like you're coaching at the start. He never said, stay back, organise, get the... I want you to play like this, Tony. You know, he said, go play, play free, play. You know, he's the team, play, play, play free.
Who were the players you didn't like playing against? Was there any players come Saturday morning... before a game, you think, oh, no, I'm in for a torrid here today?
I played over three decades, so it's difficult. You know, the people that I was playing with at the start were big, strong guys that would knock me silly, you know. Cyril Regis comes to mind, you know, and they were very difficult. And even, I would even say, into the early 90s, when you got people like Alan Shearer, you know, he kind of went in that mould. And then when they were at Blackburn, him and Newell were amazing. They worked so hard together. The ones that have always given me the amount of difficulty, don't forget we were out of Europe for 5 years, so I went for an industry where I was playing against big centre-forwards every week. So that actually, teams playing without forwards. You know, Pochettino, Spain, you drop off and, you know, where they gone, you know? You know, and Dennis's and Zidane's, these type of players that are, you know, always Peter Beardsley's we've come to, yourself and Teddy Sheringham's, these kind of give me enormous pressure because they make you think. They pull you out of that defensive unit, you know, they don't stand up against you. Because I would like the fight with Alan, you know, I'd like the... Alan was a fantastic goal scorer. You know, I wouldn't say that he was one of the toughest because I liked that battle. Yeah.
He said the other week he'd done an interview, said you was the hardest centre half he played against.
Well, thank you.
He was the most difficult, but as you say, it was prime for you because you're saying that was my style
of play, and very similar. I think when we went into the Arsenal period and we had the ball, I didn't have to get involved with that. You know, for the first 10 years of my career, I came home with broken nose, five times broken nose, you know, slip lips, ear was done. Ian Dowie did me, talk to him, he knocked me in the ear off. You know, you used to do that in those days, you know. And then the last 10 years of my career, come off the pitch, you know. you have to intercept, you have to, you know, stay on your feet a lot more. If you go to ground, you have to make sure you're going to get it. You know, I still love tackling, and I think that's an art that's gone out of the game. But the game did change, and the number 10 became... And because we was out of Europe for 5 years, I didn't get a lot of... practice of playing against that type of player. You know, and the only time I think England's done well in recent years is when we've had fantastic number 10s. You know, and Wayne Rooney's one for me, but before that, Teddy and then Peter Beardsley in 1990. I think they made goals for Gary Lineker and for Alan Shearer. So I'm much... really struggled against the Danes, but even though, you know, Marco van Basten, he was a complete centre-forward. He was 6'4". right foot, left foot, quicker than righty. He could head the ball. He had it all for me. He's a complete number nine.
And you said sometimes you weren't comfortable when you went to England. Who were the players there? Was there any that took you under a wing, or was you one of them people that was, you know, isolated and it was like, well, I don't want him taking my place? Well,
I got into the card score at the back of the thing, and that was the worst thing. I won the first hand, and I didn't let me out the card score after that. Peter Shilton and Kenny, and I thought, oh my God, geez, how am I going to just have the money? I don't want to play anymore. I want to run away. And but no, I wasn't comfortable. And big Terry Butcher was great. You know, Butch was amazing. If maybe a little bit over the top on his. You know, I saw that with Carlton Palmer. I think Carlton went over the top on occasionally with the adrenaline before a game and the, you know, the smashing of the ceilings and stuff. And I was very much took that from Butch. You know, you're talking about. I was talking about putting a player, Tony Adams, making me who I was, and Butch was definitely that, very vocal, very, and I saw the way that made me feel, actually, and he did a lot for me in that respect. I said, yeah, it motivated me, you know, self-motivation to get myself into a state, but still be in control. You know, a lot of players are very different. They like just to be calm. Nigel was in the toilet, wasn't he, you know, so... we all react differently, but certainly, you know, those guys, I think that a few of them worked against me. Not worked against me, but I strived on rejection and people that, you know, making myself prove that I'm better to them, you know, and people, I'm sure, like Gary Lineker and Glenn Hoddle didn't think I was that great, you know, technically and stuff, you know, and I went back and I remember before 98 and doing just some left foots. You know, I couldn't kick it with my, when I was 13-year-old, I couldn't kick it with my left foot, but then I go and smash one in at the end of my career when I'm 35. Anyway, I'm doing this with Glenn, and I'm sure Glenn didn't think I was technically to play that central defender in a three, and I did a bit before the game when I'm smashing it with my left foot and my right foot, and I said, not bad, Glenn. I proved a bit, and he went, hey, not so bad. You know, and I definitely changed in the 8 years. A lot of put practice. That's the name of the game, you know, practice, and I'd never be a Glenn Hoddle, but, you know, certainly weren't, I don't think in their heads, quite, you know, I remember going up for a corner and stuff, and I liked to have the competition with Vid Anderson, how many goals we could score a season, and, you know, Viv always scored plenty of goals. And I had that at Arsenal, but at England, I had Gary Lineker, and Gary was a poacher, and he wanted to be in the positions, and sometimes I would hurl myself in his positions, and he kind of said, listen, if you're not going to score, leave it. And I went... I won't say it on camera, but if I've got a chance, I'm going to go and smash it in.
You went 96 Euros. Probably should have won it. Maybe I could have won it. You know, I had a great story the other week from Stuart Pearce. Gareth Southgate misses the penalty and Stuart Pearce says they're all in a room and he walks in and you go, boo! I mean, and he said it just, everything like lifted up then. It was just like your laugh of saying bang, you know. But on the pitch, that would have hurt you, not winning that time or...
Yeah.
Should you have took a penalty? Well, you shouldn't have took a penalty.
Well, I did. I was on.
I've seen you take a penalty.
Well, I spoke to Terry, and I'm sitting, and I was going to take the six, and Gareth just came straight in between us and went, I'm taking it. And he was so confident.
Oh, really?
We kind of... I stepped back. I didn't say it was mine. Yeah, it wasn't on the record, but I was ready to go. But me and Terry looked at each other and kind of went, he's so confident, let him go. And the rest is history. So maybe I could have...
You could have been doing pizza adverts. What a nightmare.
But I went straight into the... obviously, because before that tournament, it's the first time... In that year was a massive year in my life, to be honest. You were turning. And in the January, I put my first wife into treatment. And in the February, I did the cartilage again. Mm.
Was that when John Arts... Was that...
John, yeah.
John, dangling. Yeah, you remember that?
Don't dangle with John.
Don't dangle with John in training.
John, what are you doing? Icy pit.
And Bruce is down. Great tackle, John. Great tackle. And
you're... Karma, isn't it?
It's like captains rolling round the pitch. I think, Bruce, you're missing a trick here, mate. You know, our captain's on the floor and you're saying great tackle.
So the wife had gone, the kids had gone, you know... Sofa was the park bench. I wasn't playing football. That was my release in those days because of my leg. And it was the first time in my life I didn't want to drink, but I was still getting drunk. And it just frightened the life out of me. I couldn't control this anymore, you know. I lost all control. And 12 years of drinking, 11 and a half of it, I didn't want to drink. Prison, everything. It was all part of the rides, maybe. But I actually shifted and I didn't want to drink, but then I was still getting drunk. And then went to Hong Kong just before the Euros, and I was in a hotel room, and I remember Robbie Fowler and Steve McManaman saying to me, "Oh, come on, come in dentist chair, and we'll go down, we're going to get drunk. Come on, you're the captain, you're the leader, you're the big, you know." And I went, "Oh, when we win it, I have a drink when we win it." But really inside, I was so scared. You know, I was like, I knew if I'd gone out, there was no tournament for me, you know, because I couldn't stop. So I locked myself, 15th story, locked myself in the room, and I couldn't wait to train in the next day, you know what I mean? I just closed the door and so scared. And then I had the championships, and I stayed sober for the whole championship because I thought I'd used football before to not drink. And I thought, that's worked, you know, I'm just going to throw myself. I'm not going to drink. I'm going to play football. And then as soon as it was over, and I was on a six-week bender, and then I got to the bottom. I got to my bottom.
You went to the World Cup in 98. Glenn Hoddle takes over, takes the captaincy off you and gives it to Alan Shearer. You're a proud man.
Yeah.
How did you feel?
Thanks. I didn't agree with it. And I said that, and I didn't really accept... Well, not accept, I accepted it and got on with it, but I didn't... not accept his reasons, but I thought they were poor. He said that Alan might get more penalties than me. I said, "You could have come up with better something." I've got the utmost respect. I think Glenn got the job too early. You know, he's 38 when he was England coach. I think he's the only coach out there, I think, English coach, that's got a tactical European, I'd probably call it, brain on him. You know, he really does understand the game. I just think he got it too early. And more at the point is probably the people around him. He didn't have someone in his camp like we did with Venners in 96. Donnell came in, Brian Robson came in, you know, to support Terry. Glenn didn't have that backup system. And I think we really fell down with it. And if we had that and me as captain, I think we could have really done something in the World Cup. But, hey, listen, one chance. I said that to Bex after he got sent off at Argentina. I said, "One chance, Bex, and you blew it for me." There you go.
That was a surprising thing. When I was going through my notes, I didn't realise that was the only World Cup you played in.
Yeah, I got... Well, 94 we didn't, obviously, Graham Taylor. I feel quite, you know...
Did you go on that 18 to 30 trip? Didn't you not come when we went to America in 93?
No, I didn't, no.
What a trip.
No, thank God.
For another time.
Yeah, 94, obviously, we lost to Holland and Norway.
I couldn't believe you never went to 90.
90? No, I'd like I say, after 88, I took a big hit with the national team in those days. 88, I was too young. Martin Van Basten, probably one of the best players I've ever played against. Top of his game. He gave me a torrid time.
What was it like that day?
It was torrid. He turned me inside out. But they were men, and they, you know, reminded me of Patrick and Vieira and Manu Petit when I played in the 98 team. And me, and, you know, this is, you know, I was, when we used to go out, we were men. I was a 19, 20-year-old kid playing against Van Basten, Hullet, Rijkaard. These people were AC Milan champions year in, year out. You know, they were just... beasts.
Did you ever come off the pitch that day and ever think, I'm out of my depth here? Because I remember playing against AC Milan in the Super Cup,
yeah,
getting a run around at the San Siro and coming in after the game and thinking, I thought I was half decent. I thought I was half decent player, mate. And then I watched them and what they did to
us. Normal, Paul.
It was unbelievable. And for you to, in front of everybody as well, it was uncomfortable, wasn't it?
I thought I left a lot of it on my own.
Definitely. There was no doubt about that.
I remember scoring the third goal, one of my best goals for England, Glenn Hoddle free kick, and I've smacked a great header in, just inside the box. And I've scored and I was the leading goal scorer. I got one, and Brian Robson got one of that tournament, so I was the leading goal scorer in that tournament. But I run over to the fans, and they did a lot of bad signs to me.
Did
and
they?
I kind of went like this, and I went, OK. And I went back and... said no more. But then I flew into Luton and I got Fiat Uno Young Player of the Year.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, you got that. And I got a little car. Yeah, and I came out of Luton Airport and got chased by three sets of supporters. England's fans are all chasing after me. And I went, oh. But that just fueled my... I wanted revenge. I wanted to prove myself more. And I've always... Rejection's been a big part of my game, of my... inner workings, really. I really wanted to prove that I wasn't that bad. So I focused in on Arsenal, and I focused in on winning the league in 89 and throwing everything. And if you're George saying, go on, don't worry about England, they were unorganised, they left you to dry, you know, you want to find Arsenal. And I said to Jim Rosenthal after the 88, after we got knocked out, I said, we'll win the league this year. I was so concentrated. I said it to Dave Bex as well. So it's all about me, this, isn't it? It's difficult to keep on talking about me. But
this is what it is.
But I said to Bex, I said, after the Argentina thing, yeah. I said, just go back and, you know, concentrate on Man United now, and I'm sure their fans will love you, and concentrate on your job. And they went and did the bloody dribble, didn't they? Mm. So, yeah, I shouldn't have said
that,
shouldn't I?
Well, I shouldn't have said it was your fault. That was your fault. Right, so now, towards the end of the show, now we're going to go pick, try and pick the best 11 players you play with in them positions. So,
yeah, what do you got? 4-4-2?
Whatever you want.
Okay.
You can go whatever you want.
Interesting stuff. So, this has called me nightmares. I've been flipping around all over the place.
I bet you have. Three decades.
Well, it's what I did. I put three teams, and then I picked. So I put it. Team for the 80s, I picked a team in the 90s and the noughties type of thing. I picked three teams and then I kind of filtered it around and then juggled and then that one and why did that one. And so it's been great. So where do we want to start?
Right then, we're going to start in goal.
Okay. Well, we've got people like Peter Shilt and Pat Jennings. So I started my career with Big Pat, unbelievable goalkeeper. Never, his hair just stayed. You remember his hair?
It
just stayed
at
one point. You know, saving with his feet. Peter Shilton, what do you talk about Peter Shilton? Reaction save. I think they all make good reaction saves, but this guy of his era was phenomenal. But I think I've got to stay Dave Seaman. Just because I played with him and he'll kill me, and I still see him regular. And he was like Pat in his mannerisms. I've always preferred a calm goalkeeper that just went about their business. I can't have a screaming Schmeichel behind me. I think we would have clashed every 2 minutes. And I just wanted someone that, you know, we did make him look good though, because we, you know, we did protect him. But I think I'm going to have to go. It's difficult with Peter Shilton. God, some goalkeeper, but I'll go for Dave Seaman.
Right then, good start.
This is hard.
Good start, right.
This is hard.
Right back.
Okay, well, you know, I spoke earlier about the sum of the parts. And this is really difficult. This is really difficult because Viv Anderson, two European trophies. You know, Lauren, got him from Cameroon, developed his game, flying right winger, moved him to right back, became a fantastic player in the Invincibles. Gary Neville, you know, good club. I very much thought he was great. He understood defending. He made himself a player. Very similar to Lee Dixon, who I played with. You know, if you're going to talk individually, then I've got to put Viv Anderson as my right back. If I've got to talk as a unit, then...
No, we're talking about the best 11 players you played with. If he was the best right back...
It's a really tough call because Dicko, when he started and he came to the club, he was a flying. He got forward a hell of a lot, made a lot of crosses and did great for us. But then, you know, he developed and his experience. And in the unit... You know, you win the European Cup, Winners' Cup. I want to put Dixon, Bold and Winterburn in, but if we're talking individuals, I've got to go for Viv Anderson.
All right, then. Left back.
Well, same again. You know, I want to say Nigel. I want to say Nigel because the sum of the parts is always going to be better than these individuals. And it was proven. We did it. We did it as a unit. We worked at it. And it just shows you that good club men with the right organisation become great players. And I want to say Nigel, but Ashley Cole was probably, I thought, one of the world's... He took it on board as star. We just got him at the end. I got him at the end of my career. And he understood it. He understood his body position, the way that the game changed as well, and he couldn't cover me. I didn't want him to cover me. I never wanted him behind me. I wanted him in front of me. You know, I'll play the guys offside. You know, too many, you think they can come across and cover it. The speed of the game today, you just can't get across if you're left back. Mm-hmm. Forget it. I started with Kenny Sampson, 86 caps, Ashley Cole. You know, maybe I should juggle over years. You know, I need your help, Paul.
No, you've got a big one. I mean, you're reeling them off.
I think I'm going to go for Ashley Cole, and I think just because when he went to Chelsea and he went and got the European trophy as well and he got the full set, and Kenny maybe because of the year he was in, didn't win the trophies that Ashley did.
Didn't even mention Stuart Pearce.
Stuart was very similar to Gary Neville and Lee Dixon and Nigel. They're good, honest, strong left backs that do fantastic jobs. And Stuart, for his in that era, could make a tackle. One of the strongest. You know, no forward would want to play against him in that era. Now, could that have transcended? Maybe he could have done. Good players do transcend, and we never know because Stuart didn't get on to the modern game really. So, it's hard to judge him. It's been a headache for me to judge players over decades. You know, it's incredibly difficult. But no, Ashley Cole is. I've made up my mind.
Two centre halves. Two centre halves. A lot of phone calls to be made after this. You know,
I can't pick myself.
You can if you want.
It's too egotistical, isn't it? You can't do it.
It's up to you. We can talk about you.
And it's all about partnerships. I think it's all about partnerships. And Big Butch, I mentioned earlier, big, strong, second with Ipswich. You know, big soul, strong, very similar to Butch. You know, man-to-man markers, Martin Keown's. You know, Baldy, very similar, done his job. It's very difficult just to do your job. You know, make that... It's so difficult just to win the ball and give it simple. You know, there's an art in it. You know, I was never like that with Steve. You know, I wanted to go and score the goals and, you know, go in the midfield and smash one in and stuff. And I couldn't just stay there, you know. It was incredibly frustrating under George's eras, you know. I wanted to go and play again, you know, and get involved and in training. But no, I had to do my job. And Baldy did that. Baldy did that. I'm not answering you, am I?
No, you're going through all the players. You've reeled them all off. Now you've got to pick two.
This has been really difficult because it is about partnerships and a balance, you know.
So that's why it wouldn't be a problem if you put yourself in, because then you'd be saying who is you most comfortable and better playing with.
You know, if Dave O'Leary as well, Dave, when I played with Dave at the start, I was the dominant centre-half. I would just go and attack the ball and Dave would cover around me. When you've got someone like Martin Keown in the team, he's a man-to-man marker and I had to work around him. You know, Baldy was very similar. Baldy took the lead and I kind of floated around Steve, and Jules Gamondi the same. With Big Butch, very similar. You know, he was the main dominant one, and it was very, very side to side in those days. I was dominant on the right side, he covered in, and he was dominant. Two similar players, and I don't particularly think that's great. I think you need a bit of a balance, a bit of a me and a Martin Keown or whatever, a bit of a one guy that can nail the centre forward, go and fish, but one guy that can.
Like a Vidic and Ferdinand when they played together.
Yeah, I think that was a lovely partnership. It's difficult. Let's put Sol Campbell, just because he went on to the Invincibles and did remarkably well. But I don't know then the best partner for Sol. I think maybe Dave O'Leary.
Yeah.
Weirdly, just for his longevity. It's a difficult one. Sorry, I'm not going to answer.
What shape are you going to play?
Well, we're going to go with a four, yeah?
You're going to go 4-4-2?
Oh, well, yeah.
It's up to you.
I've had this dream as well. It's just like, you know, you play with a back three, and Venner's always asked me, you know, when we did the Christmas tree, did you prefer that or Arsenal with the back four? And the four's the right number. If you've got the holding midfield players, and we'll get on to that. Hello, we got you. Cut. Jesus, this is taking forever. Oh, you know, can I go Dixon, Bolden, Winterburn?
If you want.
Can I go Dixon, Bolden, Winterburn?
Yeah.
Just for the
we'll probably let's show put, all of what let, you just said and let, then
let's
that.
Let's put me in.
Yeah.
And get, because we're.
But that
full
was
Monty
the main thing, wasn't
it?
You're not worried about the other three, are you?
No.
Joking. Let's put me in.
Exactly, because that's renowned. And I just want to get over the emphasis, and I think I've said it a few times, that those four, it's all about togetherness.
Yeah.
And I think the sum of the parts. I know it doesn't go against
to
your...
To be fair, no, as it goes, we do sort of get sometimes, because it is very interesting, 1-3-11, and we do say the best players you ever play with, but sometimes that isn't the case. It is about your shape. You know, if you're a centre-forward, we've had people on the show that have put someone in, they probably weren't the best player they ever played with, but they brought out the best in them and they scored goals because of them.
Absolutely.
So that's not a problem.
And the best back four I've ever played in, okay, as a unit, was for the Euros. Like you say, you brought it up earlier when Palmer had all the Brolin and the Asparellas and Zolas, you know, and we had a back four and we were protected by Hillier and Ian Selly, no disrespect, but, You know, it weren't the best midfield in the world. And Dave Seaman and Palmer could still be there now, and they weren't scoring. We were drummed, we were organised, and we were invincible on that day, you know. And that's the best back four I've ever got to say with. So, you know, the sum of the parts is definitely better than, you know, because I know individually, even Viv and Kenny and Ashley Cole and Sol Campbell, you put them on their own, you know, if you do a 1v1 with Thierry Henry with these players, Thierry Henry's going to get past you. You're going to get past you once. You know what I mean? Yeah. But the sum of the parts, I could guarantee you they wouldn't get past the four of us.
Right. So,
Dixon, Bold, Adams and Winterburn. God, that's so egotistical, isn't it?
No, of course it's not. Right, that's the back five, Tone. Now we'll move on to the midfield four.
This is the easy bit. That was the hard bit. I must admit, that was the most difficult bit. I'm just going to go Patrick and Manu Petit because they brought the best out in me.
How good were them two? As you just said just now, the hardest thing to do is do the easiest things.
Yeah.
And I always think if you play in that position, you have to do the easy things well, because if you get carried away, like you said, and want to bomb forward, then the whole shape goes out.
I think them two were a perfect balance. Mm. You know, Manu could run all day. We called him the horse. You know, he was a strong boy. He's very good technically, could get the ball. And you saw his third goal against Brazil in the 98 World Cup final. You know, he's just so athletic, so strong. And him in front of me, literally, it was a cigar every day. You know, I didn't do no good. No wonder I was running up the field scoring goals, you know, because he just slipped in. And he slipped. He played central defender at Monaco. You know, he was quite comfortable in every position. You know, you never underestimate that. You know, I want these kind of people. You see it today, you know, with Cazorla in the team and Arsenal and all these flames. You know, someone that's strong in front of there, you know, it stops so many goals. And not only that, it keeps the team playing as well, you know. The only team that I've ever seen rotate central defend. You know, I never saw them do that. You know, if the two centre halves usually split nowadays. Mm. If they get marked, you've got nowhere to go. But I run him off into midfield. The guy, the centre forward, used to look at me going, where's he going? Centre forward. And he used to go, and then Manu Petit, come and play centre half. And then you're playing central midfield. I've never seen that rotation. Him and Patrick, I think, were a perfect balance, perfect blend, and gave me and any team magnificent protection. And they could also play and get forward and create goals, Patrick, in semi-finals.
Well, you see, we were there at Arsenal when Patrick came from AC Milan, a young kid.
Yeah.
Did you see him at that stage go on and become world-class footballer?
No, not at all. Even his at French early days, you know, he was playing off the right side at times. And, you know, he really came to life at Arsenal. I think Arsenal and us were good for him. You know, we put him straight on a couple of occasions, which they kind of all need sometimes. And we did the same with Dennis when he came over. You know, we got about him and say, come on. You know, and he got back up and kicked us. And we went, well, that's all right. You know, he's OK. You know, he's all right. We're off this one. And Patrick, I never saw it at the start, but he took his time. I think he took his time. And then he grew with confidence. And, you know, Highbury can do that. And when you're winning things, and Arsenal's never going to suppress him. He let him grow. And probably Arsenal's greatest attribute is to let the player grow and give him confidence. Even when he was getting sent off every week, he never said a word to him, you know. And, you know, we were saying, hey, steady on, son, you know what I mean? When you're seeing them walk off, then you've won, not you walking off. You know, you do enough to, you know, let them retaliate. No, he's a wonderful footballer, strong, 6'3", could head the ball, you know, both of them could get up and down. You could speak about both of them in the same category, really.
Yeah, definitely. You know, definitely.
Yeah, super protection.
So you got your four, you got the two in front, and then what are you going to play?
Right and left. I really struggled with right-hand side players. And I was thinking about putting like Hod in the midfield, and I got Gazza and stuff. But off the right side, you know, I couldn't think, really. I mean, I'll make Rocky, but you know, I don't think it would be fair. You know, I really have to, and I don't know why I'm hesitating, but go with someone like David Beckham. I know that might be, I don't know why that might be controversial, maybe because of the brand that he is outside of football, but.
He was a good player. He was top drawer.
His delivery.
I think he's very underestimated, in my opinion.
33% of goals come from set plays. I had this conversation with John Barnes, who was a talent and was a gifted player, but I said, look, you know, the delivery, John Barnes couldn't take a corner or a free kick like David. You know, you couldn't do that. And his work rate and for the team. And I want someone like him instead of Gazza in my team because you know he's going to be there for 40 games a season, delivering like that, working like that. I just need him in my team. Yeah, I just need him in my team on the right side. Left side, I'm going to go for Robert Perez. I think he could run quicker with the ball than I could without it. He had an unbelievable low centre of gravity. Could play, you know, I was thinking of Mark Overmars and Anders Limpar back in the 91 team and kind of lefties and Barnsley, John Barnes and these type of people. But, you know, Robert won World Cup and he European Championship. And he can play.
Yeah, he's one of my favourites.
You know,
players.
He can just play. You know, you had it, Paul. Football intelligence. You know, it's a real gift. And you know how to... You know your pass before it even comes to you, you know? You know how to, where you're going to run. And you know the space is over there even though you're over here. You know that it's a football intelligence. And playing, and even in 5v2, you know when you play with Dennis, you knew, you know? And like I say, don't I? Kind of do as well, but they're intelligent. Anyway, I digress. I'll go back to Robert Perez. Could play. He's got the trophy cabinet. I said to him when he first came, listen, this is a tough league. You know, this is you need to be application training every day. And he just took all that on board and you know, he never spelt English. He still don't, I don't think. You know, but he could play.
Yeah.
I don't think...
You've got two left now.
More than Barnsley. So I'm going to go for a number 10. Yeah. I'm going to go for a number 10, and I can't... I know Teddy was underestimated, I think. A lot of people underestimated Teddy, maybe because he's English. I was going to put Teddy, I was going to put Peter Beardsley in now, who I also was underestimated, made Lineker the player that he is, or was. But I'm going to go for Dennis. I can't not play with Dennis. The only grief I had with Dennis is with... It was just before we won the 98 and we was at Middlesbrough away. And I said to him, look, all the talent you've got and you've not won anything. I said, doesn't that hurt you? And I could see it. It kind of did. I got a bit of a reaction. I don't think he's spoke to me since. But I could see it. And I said, you know, and I do believe Boldy and in tackling, in training, we give him that side of the game that he needed a bit of tenacity. He needed to want it a little bit more, you know. He was tremendously gifted. You saw the goals that he got, the goals that he created, you know. Probably the best player that I've ever played with, because not only could he score, that he could actually make goals as well. You know, that's what I come down with. So I've gone with the number 10 in Dennis Bergkamp, and I've gone for Thierry. And, you know, you've got Alan Smith, two golden boots. Underestimated, different style. Ian Wright came to the club and scored a hatful in a team that... was a defensive team, you know. Maybe if Wright was here, you know, he would have got more than Thierry Henry. So it's difficult across generations. But what Thierry did when he
But what was he like in training when you had to mark him?
Well, he didn't come anywhere near me. I made a great, great thing. I kicked him the first day he turned up, and he just floated over to floated over to the sides. And I walked off training once. He did 1v1s, arson. And Thierry Henry, and we've got the balls behind the goal, we're kicking them up to the halfway line, and then Thierry Henry, well, I've got to come out of the pack and defend 1v1. And I looked at us, I knocked the ball, and I walked in. And I said, well, where are you going? What are you doing? I said, I spent my whole career never to get into this situation. If I get in this situation, I'm dead. I'm never going to get... If he was going to beat me, I said, you're going to embarrass me, and then I'm going to get the ump, and I'm not going to like it. So I'm going to go in. And, oh, OK. So I just walked in.
I remember when we used to do that before, when Nicholas Anelka first came.
I said, what are you doing? I saw him before the World Cup in 98, and he was playing left wing. And I don't think anybody, not even Arsene, if you speak to Arsene, he'll say the same thing. No one could see what he developed into as a centre-forward. He naturally, because he played left-wing for all those years, slipped away to the left side, so, and with his pace, and he came up with that right-foot finish, you know, drifting out. So it was always natural for him, playing on the left-wing for all those years, being put in the centre-forward position, then making runs and drifting out to the left side. And he found that right foot, which was completely natural. And he must have got about 50 goals in that position, just doing that one move. You know, I saw the goal against Tottenham. You know, I think he's boom, a couple of players.
He's beaten Pete. He's gone past Ledley King now. I mean, one of the best
defenders, yeah. So I feel a bit sorry for writer Alan Smith, because it's hard to judge a Grin's generations, but...
I don't think anybody will have a qualm with,
no.
with Thierry Henry.
Is there any qualms in there? Your back fours, no, you're not happy
no,
with me back
no,
four,
I'm going for it. It's a good team. It's a good team.
My right side and my balance. It's about balancing, kids, yeah. And I think you can join in. I was going to put Hod in the middle. You know, Hod's one of the best technically players, that I've ever, you know, as good as Dennis, but he never played, you know, older than him as a number 10. That's it, mate.
No, brilliant.
It's a super sub.
No,
you're
brilliant.
On the bench, mate.
Oh, I got a mention then. Thank God for that. Is your mate?
It's your ear. I could do that. I'll put myself in the team. Put soul in. Get me out.
No,
put
you're in. You're in. You're in.
Enjoy Sky Sports Live. On all screens, on the go, and the best bits on demand.